Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. You know, we've only got a few hours left now of 2015, and here we are. We're closing the chapter of this year in our human story. 2015, I think, had some very profound changes in the landscape of the collective consciousness of humanity. I think the awakening of so many people has changed the direction of the future of the planet. I mean, and you know, so often we find ourselves in a spiritual community, and we think spirituality is the place where it all happens. But you know, I have friends on Facebook that don't mention karma or power or spirituality. In fact, they're graduates of esteemed colleges, and they stay in their Western mind, which is fine. And I watch them over the year, and I see them opening up more and more and more in their own way, in their own dynamic, if you will. You know, when we talk about the collective consciousness and the karmic momentum of the planet, the collective consciousness is not outside of you. It doesn't exist outside of you. There's not a museum in New York where you see it. There's not an art exhibit in Amsterdam where you'll find it, or at one of those wonderful chocolate pastry shops in Paris. The collective consciousness of humanity is inside of you. Your relationship with the collective is an inside job. And from my perspective, from my observation of the collective, we've shed a whole lot of dogma, a whole lot of grief, a whole lot of substrate, if you will, of the struggle of humanity. Certainly there's some big chapters of difficult times that are going to still roll out. But overall, I think we've really covered some serious ground, and I think we're very much poised for an exceptional 2016. I suggest we're going to see humans mastering the art of manifestation, mastering the art of creation through the public eye, through the public media, like we've probably never seen before. And they're going to start waking up like popcorn. It's really going to be fun to watch. And, you know, it's the close of 2015, and I just want to take the time and thank those who have helped me in my journey, specifically Susan Westfall. She runs the show behind the scenes of New Human Living Radio, and when I write books and I write blogs and I write articles for magazines, her careful eye and her very open heart has been a very positive, wonderful contribution to what I do to help humanity. And when you work so closely with somebody like that, it's pretty funny sometimes how in step you can get, even though you're not talking or physically in the same space. It's, you know, like I was telling my kids the other day, I write my thoughts out and I give them to Susan, and she swims in my thoughts, and that's such a encompassing trait, and it's been such a joy having her both manage the guests on the show and me as guests on other shows, to look at the content of what New Human Living's putting out. I just wanted to be sure to take the time at these closing hours to give thanks for such a wonderful influence to the New Human Living efforts. Susan Westfall's been just remarkable. Our guest tonight, Pam Whitworth, she's the founder of the Shanti Children's Foundation. Shanti provides education to underprivileged children in Nepal. The topic tonight is compassion in action. Compassion. And you know, I think if you take anybody who's walking the talk and you peel away the surface story, if you will, there's this underlying compassion from within their own heart that drives them, that motivates them. And I think Pam is no different. I want to bring her on the show and get right to it. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Thank you, Les. It's great to be here with you.
So I've been looking over your material, and it looks like you started this foundation before you knew you started this foundation. It was almost like you came in the back door. Can you give us some background as to how this came about?
Sure. So I guess, you know, it's sort of been percolating my whole life without me knowing it. And I know your listeners are interested in consciousness and spirituality, and I would place myself in that same boat. I've been a meditator since I was, for almost 40 years. But at the same time, as I had a really firm belief in making a contribution to world consciousness through meditating and developing myself, I also always felt a desire and a need to be of service in some way. Like, it was important to do it on that quiet level, but at the same time, people are hungry and they need to be fed. So that, you know, kind of stayed with me probably from the time I was a child. And I didn't know exactly how it was going to manifest itself. At the same time, from the time I was a young teen, maybe 12 years old, reading stories about the Himalayas and Annapurna and Everest, I had a desire to go there, and specifically to go to Nepal. At that time, people weren't traveling to those kinds of places. This is 35 years ago. And so it just seemed like a dream that probably would never be realized. But then in 1995, as life sometimes unfolds in mysterious ways, I had an opportunity to go to Nepal. A friend of mine was going, and I was really envious. And she said, "Why don't you come with?" And at first, everything in me said, well, how could I possibly do that? How could I be gone so long? Where's the money going to come from? Am I going to go without my husband? That just seemed unthinkable. But this seed was planted. And so, to make a long story short, I did end up going to Nepal in 1995, thinking at the time that it would be sort of a trip of a lifetime. And that trip was just, all it did was really open a door for me. I fell in love with the people in Nepal, and even though that was my first trip, the trip that I thought would be my big trip, as soon as I got home, I wanted to go back. I wanted to visit again. So I did that, and as you can imagine, what happened was I started getting involved with children there. I knew someone who had moved to Nepal. She got involved with a school in her neighborhood. She was living in Kathmandu. And she asked me if I wanted to sponsor a child. And, of course, I said yes. And so I started sponsoring a child myself. And I was going back and forth to Nepal visiting and visiting the school, visiting this boy, Punya, that I had started sponsoring. He was about 5 years old, little tiny thing in a little school uniform with a huge oversized tie. And I got to know the school, the people running the school, and I came to understand that education was not something that was available to all kids at that time. It still isn't in Nepal. And that there was a huge need for needy children, poor families, to have some support so that their kids could go to school. So I thought, well, I'm sponsoring a kid. Why don't, and I'm managing that, I'm sending the money, I'm visiting the school, I'm checking on him to make sure that he's in school and everything is going okay. I could do that for more kids. So I started asking friends if they would like to sponsor a child. And I would, you know, meet the kids when I was in Nepal. I would share that information with my friends, hook them up with a particular child. I'd have bio information and a photo. And so that's kind of how it started. It just started with a few friends of mine. And I was managing it, getting to know the school better, and just facilitating this support for children to be able to go to school. I had no idea at that time that I would be starting a nonprofit. I couldn't see that far down the road. It was just sort of one step at a time. And if anybody had told me at that time that I would someday be sponsoring 100 children, I would have said, no way. I'm totally unskilled. I don't have any experience in the nonprofit world. I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't know how I could ever do that. But my life was sort of unbeknownst to me coming towards me. And it just started that way, very simply. And it's just grown in a kind of grassroots sort of way from one friend to another, word of mouth, people telling friends, and then someone coming to me and saying, oh, I'd like to sponsor a child. At one point, there have been certain important junctures. At one point, I was organizing for about 14 children, and I felt pretty maxed out just doing that conscientiously, making sure that the money was going to the right place, checking on the kids, trying to keep the kids and the sponsors connected, getting updated photos of the kids, getting their marks sheets from the schools, interacting with the schools. And then a friend of mine wrote an article about what I was doing for a local paper. And suddenly, overnight, more people wanted to sponsor, and I couldn't say no. So kind of overnight, I went from 14 kids to about 30 kids. And we've just continued to grow and continued to grow. And I'll tell you, it's been an amazing learning experience for me. I've learned so much. And, you know, you hear these stories about people saying, you know, you're kind of protected from what's coming in the future because if you knew, you would feel completely overwhelmed. But as it comes to you little by little, you sort of go into learning mode at important junctures when you have to kind of up your game. So it's just been an amazing experience for me in so many ways.
Well, in what way would you say Shanti is different or special in as far as the nonprofit world is concerned?
Well, thanks for asking that, Les. We're small. That's one of the main things. I mean, people are very familiar with the large nonprofits, Save the Children, CARE. They're a whole different animal. People send off donations to those organizations, and they're great organizations, but people don't know really where specifically where their money is going. The thing is, with Shanti, what has always been really important for me and what's been important for our donors and for the kids, too, is that there's a very personal element to it. So people, our sponsors, they sponsor a particular child. I've had sponsors who have been sponsoring a child for 10 years, 12 years. They've watched that child grow. They've watched them develop and blossom. And that human personal connection is so fulfilling, both for the kids, for the sponsors, for me, you know, to watch that happen, to facilitate that, to see the donors step up with all the best human qualities. You know, I get to experience that. I get to intersect with people when they're really displaying all their best qualities of kindness and generosity and caring. It's really uplifting, you know, to have that. So Shanti, we're small. I want to stay small. People often say, oh, the answer to all your financial challenges as a charity are to be big. But I never want to be big, so big that I don't know all the children. Right now, I know all the kids. I know their names. I know their stories. In many cases, I know the families. We try to do family visits so we can see what's the ongoing situation for the families, what are their challenges. And there's just something really sweet and nourishing in having that heart connection. And I kind of feel that even more than the money, and of course the money is super important because otherwise the children wouldn't be able to go to school, so we're able to give them that and give them some security. Many of our kids board at the schools because they're from remote areas. So they have stability, they have security, they can eat well at the school. So all of that's really important. But what I feel as time has gone by, what I've come to see is that the thing that we're doing that's even more important is providing this connection, this deep human heart value connection that we're all longing for, that nourishes all of us. And I've had so many of our donors and sponsors say, this just makes me so happy, you know,
right. Oh,
to,
sure.
to know this child and to get a letter from this child, you know, a couple letters every year, and to watch them change and their writing gets better and their thinking gets larger and we get to know each other. I mean, that's really such a sweet experience.
Well, I got to imagine when you look at a young child and then over the course of years observe that child grow up, and because of your action and your influence, and like you said, that heart space connection, can you tell us some examples, some stories of some of the transformations of the children?
For sure. So I was actually looking over the website and I was reading through some of my blog entries because I've been writing a blog on our website. I think I started it maybe in 2010. And if anyone really wants more of a feel for Shanti, the blog portion of the website, I have a lot of updates that I've written, many of them from the field when I've been in Nepal. So I think they're very personal. But anyway, I was reading through that and was sort of reminding me of all these experiences that I've had. And one was about a girl named Fajar. And Fajar is one of two girls that we ended up sponsoring in Kashmir. They're the only two kids we've ever sponsored not in Nepal. And I was in India. A friend of mine was encouraging me to come to Kashmir. He was Kashmiri, and he wanted me to come and meet his family, and he was regaling me about how beautiful Kashmir was. I had no intention of going to Kashmir, but kind of on an impulse for, I have no idea why, I decided to go. And what happened on that trip was I met two girls who desperately wanted education and had no opportunity. And I felt like that was what pulled me to go to Kashmir. Unbeknownst to me, they were pulling me to come there to give them an opportunity. So one of them was a girl named Fajr. And her parents, her father had a little education. He was driving a taxi. The mother had was illiterate. There were two girls in the family. The older sister was in school, and the father was just barely able to send her to school. The younger daughter was dying to go to school, and the father was telling me about this, and he said, she asks me all the time, and it just breaks my heart that I can't send my daughter to school. And she wants to go. She gets her sister to try to teach her her lessons at home. Her older sister's been trying to teach her to read, and she's always saying, Dad, don't buy chicken. You know, which is sort of a special treat for the family occasionally. They did, it was something they couldn't afford. But she said, don't ever buy chicken. Save that money so that you can send me to school. This little girl really wanted to go to school. And when I met her, she said, I want to be an airline pilot. So I thought, we have to do something. So I started sending out emails to people from Kashmir saying, you know, can we get sponsorship for this little girl? And I got all this response, got the money together, and I was able to go back to the family, and her father said, let's tell her together. So we're all sitting on the floor in their little room having tea, and I told Fajr that she had sponsorship. She was going to be able to go to school. And she buried her head in her father's lap and just burst into tears. She was so happy. The next year, when I actually went back the following year to check on her, she had started school. She had been behind when she started because she started late. And by the following year, she was first in her class. Wow. And she's continued to be at the top of her class, and she's doing great. She's now in class, I think she's in class 8, and she sends letters to her sponsors from time to time, and we keep in touch, and she's just doing great. And so here's a kid with this huge desire for education, and if somebody hadn't stepped up to the plate, where would she be? She'd still be languishing, wishing she could go to school. So, I mean, you know, here we are in the world, so many difficult things going on, so many things that seem overwhelming and heartbreaking, and you think, what can I do? How can I make a difference? How can I make a change for anything? Well, here's somebody who made a change for one child. They didn't change the world, but they changed the world for one child. And I think, you know, if that's all we do in our whole life is make a big difference for one person, that's huge. That's significant. So we can make a difference. That's what I do. That's what keeps me going.
Do you, when you see Nepal over time, is the need for these donors, and is that growing? Is there more kids that are needing the help to get into the education that they want?
Yes. I mean, you know, when I first started traveling to Nepal, well, let me just say that the country has gone through huge transitions. In the time that I've been going there, it's gone from being an extremely traditional country, very traditional culture, went through a civil war for 10 years, huge political upheaval, extreme poverty, and then this last year, a major earthquake. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with that, but this Nepal underwent devastation in April, and it's going to take years for the country to get back on its feet. So there's a huge need. And in some ways, more than ever, both new kids, because they're children not only who need education, but need a safe place. They're children who lost some or all of their family in the earthquake. We've sponsored quite a few children who were victims of the earthquake, and they're traumatized. Many of them have been orphaned. They need a safe, stable place to live so they can heal. And, of course, they need education for the future because the country is modernizing. And these kids that are going to school, for most of them, they come from families that are illiterate. So they're first-generation literate. It's really needed for them to be able to create a future for themselves, help their families, and fulfill their dreams. You know, they're no different than children anywhere else. They have dreams about what they want to do in their lives, but they need education to be able to fulfill that.
So when when you're talking about first-generation literacy, it must be inspiring to watch what that does to a household, to a family dynamic, to have that kind of opportunity come to the children, and then the children, by the medium of education, totally expands the possibilities of their own life. And I got to think that rubs off on the family dynamic too, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's both an incredible blessing, and it's challenging. You know, it's a blessing in that if you look at any, you know, recent research in recent years, there are all of this indication that education is one of the best things that we can do with our donor dollars because it has such a wide-ranging, long-term impact, not only on the individual that gets educated, but their extended family and their future family. So in terms of they're more likely to make education a priority and educate their own children, better hygiene, better health, less sickness, less violence, just so many benefits from education for people to improve their lives. So it's a wonderful investment for a donor, if you want to look at it that way. It benefits the family. Think of having an illiterate family. They can't read a contract. They don't know if someone is ripping them off financially. So here's a child that is now literate. They can help the family in those ways, let alone the fact that they have more opportunities to get a better job. These kids are like the hope of the whole family. And the dynamic is often that they go on and work and they're able to support the whole extended family. So it's a great boon. Education is a great boon, both personally and for the whole family. And when you think of the country and the culture and the development of Nepal as a whole, you want educated people. Who's going to be the future of the country? Who's going to craft the culture, the political climate? Educated people are needed to do that, to further the whole country. So it's one small thing when you think about taking a five-year-old and putting them in kindergarten.
Sure.
But think of what, you know, what's going to radiate out from that over time. And add to that the fact that that five-year-old now, year after year after year after year, knows there's somebody on the other side of the world that cares enough about them to make sure that they have an education, that they have enough to eat, that they have clothes, that they're safe. That in itself is really significant. So, you know, and you were asking about what Shanti does that's unique. One thing that we do is also, and we can do because we're small, is we have a very hands-on, very personal grassroots relationship with the kids, with the schools, with their families. And that's really, I mean, it's just the way that it's kind of unfolded because that's where I find my joy. I want to know the children. I want to understand them. I want to hear if they have a problem. As they get older, if they want somebody to talk to about their future and their future education and what path to take, I'm available to them. And so that's gratifying for me. It's been transformational for me, especially because I'm working cross-culturally. So think about a parent trying to parent in a sensitive, conscientious way and all the things that you might deal with over the lifetime of your child. I'm not saying I'm a parent to these kids because I don't see them. I only see them for a certain amount of time, a couple of months every year. But I try to be available to them. On top of it, I'm working cross-culturally. I'm trying to understand their culture and be sensitive to that and very supportive of what they need in that context. So, you know, it's been a big learning experience for me, and I think it's also, I think I can say that it's transformational for the kids too. Knowing somebody cares about them, that they have a sponsor, most of the sponsors commit to a child and they stay in that sponsorship year after year after year. So they have that. They communicate through letters back and forth that I organize. I take pictures of the kids every year so the sponsors can see the kids grow. But also, those kids know that I'm there for them. And it's been really interesting as the kids have gotten older to spend time with them and to talk to them about their future. What I've come to see is they don't have anybody really to do that with. They don't have career counselors. They don't have academic counselors. Their parents are illiterate, so it's very difficult for them to get that kind of guidance or from their family. So I've had many experiences of sitting with one of the older kids and just talking to them as a friend about their future and what they want. And I've had feedback where kids have said to me, Didi, I don't have anybody to talk to about these things. And so I can provide that. How many organizations do that with all their kids? I don't think, you know, it's just not possible when you're large. You just don't have the structure where you can do that kind of thing.
So when you talk about the kids, you mentioned that around 5 years old is perhaps the entry point at kindergarten. I mean, how long does this process go on? At what age does it terminate?
Good question. The kids, when we started, Nepal works on an educational system called 10 plus 2, where they graduate out of class 10. They have a big national school leaving certificate exam at the end of 10. When I first started sponsoring kids, there weren't that many kids that were making it that far. So if they got through class 10, did well on their final exams, they were in great shape. They could get a government job. They were set. that was our goal in the beginning, but it's evolved over time because the whole society has been changing. Now, we started a number of years ago supporting the kids through class 12. So they graduate out of 10, they go on to what they in Nepal call college, quote unquote, for class 11 and 12, where they have to choose a course of study, science, business, that kind of thing. We've been doing that for a while, and that was a big jump for us in terms of organization and management and all that, but we've managed to do it. The kids are doing great. Now we're poised for our next jump because the kids are wanting to go on after class 12. They're wanting to go to university, and they're feeling more and more a need to be able to do that. And up until now, we just haven't had the management structure to be able to oversee that kind of thing, where now, you know, you have kids scattered all over the place in different programs. How do you oversee that? How do you even pay their fees? Well, life works in mysterious ways. And I've needed an assistant for years and have been looking for someone for years and have not had any luck. And when I was going to Nepal this year, I again had a conversation with a friend of mine who also has a small nonprofit in Nepal. He was again saying, Pam, you've got to have some help. How do you do this alone? It's like impossible. And I said, well, do you have any suggestions? And for the first time, he had a suggestion of someone that he knew that might be a possibility for me. So when I went over to Nepal, I thought, well, I'm so busy, but at least I'll meet this person and see if there's any possibility that he would be a good assistant. And I kind of put it in the back of my mind because I had so many things on my plate. I thought, oh, great, you know, how do I meet, vet, hire somebody? This is like a whole new arena for me. But I had coffee with this guy, and we had a nice rapport. He seemed really devoted to social work, which is not that common in Nepal. He had good language skills, so we could easily communicate. And most important, he was really enthralled by what we were doing. And he started showing up at my hotel every morning and just going with me on all of my home visits, school visits, seeing the kids. He just wanted to see what I did, how I did it. And he just loved what we were doing. He was really impressed. He's seen a lot of organizations functioning in Nepal. He sees a lot of waste. He sees people being paid big bucks. And he saw that we were small, simple, working on a shoestring, but really working closely with the kids. And fast forward a few days, we went to visit one of the slums in Kathmandu that he had some contacts in. We ended up sponsoring a couple little girls from this slum. Then he went with me to do a home visit to the family of one of our sponsored kids. And while we were there, the earthquake happened. So we were together the day of the earthquake. And it was very fortunate for me because I ended up, nobody could go anywhere. Everyone was staying outside, sleeping outside. People couldn't go into their houses. It was a very terrifying time. And I ended up sleeping out in a cornfield with him and 18 other people that were his family and neighbors. And we were there 24/7 for 4 or 5 days while the aftershocks continued, while we were trying to get information about our kids. Everything was just in total chaos, and everybody was just totally traumatized. So it took our, as you can imagine, it took our relationship from A to Z really fast, our working relationship. And the first morning after the earthquake, we were all sleeping in this kind of puppy pile out in this field. Nobody was sleeping really, but we were just all piled under this tarp. And first thing in the morning, he looked at me and said, "We're going to need to help a lot more kids now because there's going to be orphaned kids from this." And I was so impressed that, like, his first thought was, there's going to be a need, and how are we going to respond to that? So we ended up obviously working together. When I got a flight out and came home, we were on the phone constantly, day after day after day. Fortunately, from our donors and my friends, a lot of donations started coming in, so we were able to respond. We did a lot of grassroots earthquake relief in the immediate aftermath with medicines, water purification, shelter materials, because people were still living outside, trying to locate all our kids, trying to locate all the families. Tejendro was running all over Kathmandu trying to locate them and assess what was needed. We were giving food relief. We were giving medical. We also organized two big food relief distributions in a couple of the really hard-hit areas close to the epicenter. And our kids at Pegasus School, which is one of the schools where we work with, our sponsored kids there helped organize that food distribution. They weighed all the food, they made all the food packets, and they went on the 15-hour journey to distribute these materials. So our kids really got involved, which was really a beautiful, sweet experience. So we've really been working hard since the earthquake. We've taken on a lot more kids, some of them who are still quite traumatized, who have lost family members or all their family. Some were injured in the quake. We rebuilt the girls' hostel at one of the schools we work with because it was destroyed. So there have just been many, many, many needs in the wake of that, and it's going to continue to be that way for quite a long time.
Wow, I can really see how, you know, I find it curious that you talked about in your childhood you had this inclination and fascination with the area, and then as time progressed you engaged it more and more. Let's take a look at the donor side of this. As a donor, what would one expect? I mean, how does the process start? What does that look like? Kind of walk through the minutia of what it is to become a donor and to be a donor over time.
Okay, so anyone who's sort of interested in being involved in Shanti, I guess the first thing would be to go to our website, because if you have questions or you want more information, there's a lot on the website. But I'm also very available to talk in person or by email. There's an email address on the website, which is simply info@ShantiChildrensFoundation.org. So if someone is interested, number one, they can always donate via the website. There's a donate page with a PayPal link. You don't have to have a PayPal account, just a credit card. So it's very easy to donate. If someone is interested in becoming a long-term sponsor of a child, they can email me. And usually what we do is we send information, a bio, photo of a child, and just make sure that, you know, we just want a potential sponsor to feel like it's a good fit. So we give a photo, we give lots of bio information about the child, what their needs are. Ideally, we hope that someone, if they do want to sponsor, will commit long term, of course, to the best of their ability. I mean, things happen in life, that's fine. But because once we take sponsorship on for a child, we're committed. We don't drop a child. We continue to keep them. So if a child is a boarding student, the cost is about $800 a year. If they're a day student, it's $350 to $400 a year. This gives them, as boarding students, room, board, school uniform, books. We provide medical, dental as needed, clothing, did I say food, everything they need. Because many of these kids come from remote rural areas. So we've had kids who have come from, like, Humla, which is in the remote western part of Nepal, and they may not go home for 3, 4, 5 years at a time. They may not see their family. So we're taking care of everything for them. So we have people who sponsor a child. We have people who sponsor multiple children. We also have people who do something that we call co-sponsor a child, which means if we try to organize so that if someone wants to help, they can help at a level that's comfortable for them. So we have people where, like, two people together sponsor a child. We've had a couple situations where a group of friends together will sponsor a child. And then, like I said, we've had people who have sponsored 2 kids, 4 kids, 6 kids. So it's, you know, I just feel like if someone wants to help, if their heart is moved and they want to be connected with a child, we want to make it happen somehow. So whatever is comfortable for the donor to manage year after year.
It sounds like there's some
flexibility. So they would just contact, you know, shoot me an email, and then we would start a conversation about, you know, what they want to commit to and what children we have that are needing support, and just give them whatever information they need. We also do need general donors because for sponsors, all of the money that comes in goes for the kids' school fees and their needs. But we also keep a fund for extra things that are needed, like medical and dental. They're kids, you know. There's always stuff. One needs eyeglasses. This one has cavities and has to go to the dentist, you know. Another one falls down on the playing field and smashes his nose and has to go to the doctor. So, you know, there are needs, and we try to provide that for the kids. And now, of course, you know, the future, this next year and beyond, there's a lot of uncertainty. We don't know what the needs are going to be. There's still needs in the wake of the earthquake, and also there's been a lot of political difficulties in Nepal, and so economically things are extremely difficult there. So if we need to provide some more support, we want to be in a situation where we can actually do that.
So
yes,
what do you
we
see,
do need general donations also.
What do you see as the next steps with this? I mean, when you look down the road, how do you see this unfolding?
Well, I mean, one thing that a couple things. In this coming year, I think it's going to be important. We do want to take on some more kids. We have some kids that we took on temporarily after the earthquake just so their families could get on their feet. So we committed just for a couple of years to help with school fees until the families can get back on track. But the big thing is, one thing that I see is that we do want to be moving towards setting up a program where the kids can go on to university. So we're trying to start that college fund and seed that fund because we have some kids that are going to be in that situation in the very near future. And now that we have Tejendra, who is my assistant, we can manage that. We just brought him to the States for a month. He just returned to Nepal. But he and I spent a lot of time talking and talking with our board of directors about how to organize and create this opportunity for the older kids. And with him there to oversee it, we're poised to be able to do that. I'm really excited about it because, you know, by the time a child gets to class 12, I've known that kid since they were small. And when I see their desire to go on and the frustration of not having the funds, it breaks my heart. So this is really fulfilling a big dream for them and a big dream for me. I've wanted to do this for a long time. So this is another thing that donors could help us with. They could help us seed that fund so that we have some money in place so that these next few kids, when they're ready to start university, we can say that it's possible for them and we can support them to do that.
Now, are these universities that are foundations of the government, or are they private universities? Or,
well, there's both. There are private universities in Nepal, and there is a big government state university called Tribhuvan. We would like the kids, if possible, to go to Tribhuvan because it's much more reasonably priced. But we're looking at all possibilities right now because it sort of depends on where the child can get in, where we can set up a situation for them to board, where there's a hostel situation for them. But Tejendra is there. Tejendra went through the educational system there himself, so he's really familiar with it. And he's on the ground right now doing research to figure out what are the different opportunities for the kids. And he's trying to find places for them to be able to live while they go to university. So we're really blessed to have him. He's just doing a great job.
So as these kids go through the program, have you seen kids return to the system, and or once they get that education, they move on?
Well, I could tell you about a couple kids. I'm thinking of two. One is a girl that we sponsored, and a very smart girl, really motivated, really organized, and she ended up, her sponsor independently ended up sending her on to a nursing program, and that girl, I've kept in close touch with her. She's really wonderful, and she's finished her nursing program. She was in Kathmandu during the earthquake and ended up volunteering for us. And she traveled around with Tejendra, and she gave health advice to the families and the kids because there were a lot of health issues and challenges right after the earthquake because of all the airborne dust and germs and water contamination and all of that. So she visited the families, she visited our kids. She was just wonderful, and she loved doing it. So it was just gratifying to see her really want to give back in that way. I'm thinking of another young man, Sagar Karki, who graduated from class 12, and I've stayed in touch with him also. He's a really sweet young man. He really impressed me because he loves to read. And people in Nepal just don't read very much. They read newspapers, but they don't read for pleasure. And it's something I'd like to really encourage in our children. But he loves to read, and His sponsor from before just sent a book for him back with Tejendra. But this young man, he is now managing to teach school part-time, and he's putting himself through university. And it's just really inspiring because he comes from a very poor family. He's working really hard to make this happen. He's going to university. He found a program that was very inexpensive for him to go to, but he could do it, and he's working really hard. Tejendra just met up with him, talked to him, and Tejendra sent me an email and said, I'm so impressed with this young man. He's just really working hard, and he's just a great kid. So, I mean, I could tell you story after story after story about the kids. They're just amazing. And, you know, and the same with our donors. The donors just, they're always sending me little notes and thanking me for being able to be involved in this. And whenever I send out an update, I send out email updates from time to time, just giving kind of a progress report, sometimes from Nepal, sometimes from here. And I'll get like 60 emails back from people just saying, oh, I just love hearing about this, and I love hearing about the kids, and it's so personal, and I can just envision the whole thing. And one of our donors, she had been a sponsor for about 6 months. Many of the sponsors are people that I know, but she was a friend of a friend, and she heard about it. She became a sponsor. And after about 6 months, she got a letter from her sponsored child, and she was just kind of blown away to have that personal contact. And then she decided she wanted to visit Nepal. So she called me, and I said, sure, you know, you could meet your sponsored child, and you could probably stay at the hostel for a few days, and I'll organize it. And I organized it with the principal of Pegasus School. She ended up going to Nepal. Well, she stayed at the hostel with the kids. She met her sponsored child, and she just totally fell in love with the kids. Just, she came back, and she was just blown away. And the kids loved her, and they just had a great time together. And she's now on our board of directors. She's inspired a lot of other people to become sponsors. She's done fundraising for us. And, you know, it's that personal element. It just makes people's hearts happy to have that.
Well, we're almost out of time, so I want to make sure you get a chance to mention the website again and how people can get a hold of you.
Thank you, Les. So it's ShantiChildrensFoundation.org. And on the website, there is a donate page. There's also a blog page. And if you want to read the past blogs, on the right-hand side of the blog page, it says archive. You can see lots of pictures of the kids. You can read going back 5-6 years. It's very personal. It'll give you a feeling of what it's like on the ground in Nepal. And you can email me anytime at info@ShantiChildrensFoundation.org. I'd love to hear from you. And
well,
we
Pam,
can have a phone conversation.
We're pretty much out of time, so I just want to thank you for being on the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Les. It was just a pleasure.
That was Pam Whitworth of the Shanti Children's Foundation. You know, when you show up for your life purpose, your heart expands. The vision of your life expands. And that's when you can go to bed every day feeling satisfied and fulfilled, because you showed up for your potential. You showed up for your worth. And you took a step in that direction to listen to the show tonight. You can go to newhumanliving.com, and there's a whole archive of radio shows that you can use in your commute. Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us tonight. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast.
to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.